did not matter. He, Arthas, hungered for revenge, and he was going to have it. Every time Mal'Ganis tried to cast a spell, Frostmourne was there, knocking him aside, slicing his flesh, harrying him until the moment came when the death blow would be dealt. He felt Frostmourne's anticipation, its craving, and he cried out as he swung the rune blade in a shimmering blue arc to neatly carve a deadly furrow across Mal'Ganis's midsection. Dark blood spurted in an arc, pattering on the snow, as the Dreadlord fell. There was astonishment on his face. Even at the end, he had not believed he could be defeated. For a moment, Arthas stood, the wind and snow writhing about him, the glow of the runes on Frostmourne's blade, partially obscured by dark, demonic blood, illuminating the glorious scene. "It is finished," he said softly. "This part of your journey, yes, young prince," Frostmourne whispered. Or was it truly the Dark Lord Mal'Ganis had spoken of? He did not know or care. Carefully, he bent and wiped the blade clean in the snow. "But there is more, so much more. So much power that could be yours. So much knowledge and control." Arthas remembered Muradin's reading of the inscription. His hand went to his heart without his immediately realizing it. The blade was part of him now, and he was part of it. The snowstorm was becoming worse. He realized with dawning surprise that he was not at all cold. He straightened, holding Frostmourne, and looked about him. The demon lay stiffening at his feet. The voice, Frostmourne's or the mysterious Dark Lord's, was right. There was more, so much more, and the winter would teach it. Arthas Menethil clutched the rune blade, gazed out into the snowstorm, and ran to embrace it all. Arthas knew he would remember the bells all his life. They were rung only on occasions of great state import, a royal wedding, the birth of an heir, the funeral of a king, all the things that marked passages in the life of a kingdom. But today, they were being rung in celebration. He, Arthas Menethil, had returned home. He had sent word ahead of his triumph, of discovering who had been behind the plague, of searching him out, of slaying him, and of this day, his glorious return to his place of birth. As he strode along the road toward Capital City on foot, he was greeted with cheers and applause, the grateful outpouring of thanks of a nation saved from disaster by their beloved prince. He accepted this as his due, but his mind was on seeing his father after so long. "I would speak with you in private, father, and tell you of the things I have learned and seen," he had written into his letter, delivered a few days earlier by a swift courier. "You have, I am certain, spoken with Jaina and Uther. I can imagine what they have said, tried to turn you against me. I assure you, I have only done what I believe to be the greatest good for the citizens of Lordaeron. In the end, I have destroyed the one who began this plague upon our people, and I return home victorious, eager to begin a new era for our kingdom." Those who marched behind him were as silent as he, their faces as cowled. The crowd did not seem to require their response to wildly celebrate their return. The mighty drawbridge was lowered, and Arthas strode across it. The cheering throngs were here too, no longer comprised of commoners, but of diplomats, lesser nobility, visiting dignitaries from the elves, dwarves, and gnomes. They stood not just in the courtyard, but also above it in viewing boxes. Rose petals, pink and white and red, rained down upon the land's returning hero. Arthas remembered that once he had thought to see Jaina standing before him on their wedding day, The petals falling upon a face lit with a smile, turned up to kiss him.
Jaina.
Moved by the image, he caught one of the red petals in a gloved hand. He thumbed it thoughtfully, and then frowned as a stain appeared. It grew before his eyes, desiccating and destroying the petal, until it was more brown than red in his palm. With a quick, dismissive gesture, he tossed the dead thing away and continued. He pushed open the huge doors to the throne room he knew so well, strode forward, glanced at Taranis briefly, and threw his father a smile that was mostly hidden by the cowl. Arthas knelt in obeisance, Frostmourne held before him, its tip touching the seal carved into the stone floor.
Ah, my son. Glad I am to see you safely home, Taranis said, rising somewhat unsteadily.
Taranis looked unwell, Arthas thought. The incidents of the last several months had aged the monarch. His hair was grayer now, his eyes tired. But it was all going to be all right now.
You no longer need to sacrifice for your people. You no longer need to bear the weight of your crown. I've taken care of everything.
Arthas rose, his armor clattering with the movement. He lifted a hand and drew back the hood from his face, watching for his father's reaction. Taranis's eyes widened as he took in the change that had come over his only son. Arthas's hair, once golden as the wheat that had given sustenance to his people, was now bone white. He knew his face was pale as well, as if the blood had been drained from it.
It is time, Frostmourne whispered in his mind.
Arthas moved toward his father, who had halted on the dais, staring, uncertain. There were several guards positioned about the room, but they would be no match against him, Frostmourne, and the two who had accompanied him. Arthas strode boldly up the carpeted steps, and seized his father by the arm. Arthas drew back his blade. Frostmourne's runes brightened in anticipation, and then a whisper, not from the rune blade, but a memory. The voice of a dark-haired prince, seemingly from another lifetime ago. He was assassinated. A trusted friend. She killed him. Stabbed him right in the heart. Arthas shook his head, and the voice was silenced.
What is this? What are you doing, my son?
Succeeding you, father. And Frostmourne's hunger was sated for the moment.
Arthas turned them loose then, his new, unquestioning, obedient subjects. Dispatching the guards who charged him upon the death of his father was a simple matter, and he stormed with cold purpose back out into the courtyard. It was madness. What had once been revelry had now become frenzy. What had once been celebration had now become a frantic flight for life. Few escaped. Most of those who had waited for hours in line to welcome their prince back now lay dead, blood congealing from hideous wounds, limbs ripped off, bodies broken. Ambassadors now lay with commoners, men and women with children, all hideously equal in death. Arthas did not care what their eventual fate was, carrion for the crows or new subjects to follow his rule. He would leave that to his captains, Falric and Marwyn, as bone-white as he and twice as merciless. Arthas marched through the way he had come, focused and intent upon one single thing. Once clear of the courtyard and the corpses, animated or still, he broke into a run. No horse would bear him now. The beasts grew frantic at the smell of him, and those who followed him. But he had found that he did not tire. Not when Frostmourne, or the Lich King who spoke to him through the runeblade, was whispering to him. And so he ran swiftly, his legs carrying him, to a place he had not been in years. Voices swirled in his head, memories, snippets of conversations. You know you were not supposed to ride him yet. You missed your lessons. Again.
Invincible's horrible screams of agony, echoing in his mind. The light, pausing for that awful moment, as if deciding whether or not he was worthy of its grace. Jaina's face, as he ended their relationship.
Listen to me, boy. The shadow has already fallen, and nothing you do will deter it. The harder you strive to slay your enemies, the faster you'll deliver your people into their hands. This isn't a blighted apple crop. This is a city full of human beings.
We know so little. We can't just slaughter them like animals out of our own fear.
You lied to your men and betrayed the mercenaries who fought for ye. That's no King Tyrannus's boy.
But they were the ones who could not see, could not grasp. Jaina, Uther, Tyrannus, Muradin. All of them, at some point, by word or look, had told him he had been wrong. He slowed his pace as he came to the farmstead. His subjects had been here before him, and now there were only corpses lying, stiffening, in the earth. Arthas steeled himself against the pain that recognition brought with it even now. They had been the lucky ones to simply die. A man, a woman, a youth, his own age. And the snapdragons. Blooming like mad this year, it would seem. Arthas stepped close and extended a hand to touch one of the beautiful, tall, lavender-blue flowers, then hesitated, remembering the rose petal. He had not come here for flowers. He turned and strode to a grave, nearly 7 years old now. Grass had overtaken it, but the marker was still readable. He did not need to read it to know what lay here. For a moment he stood, more moved by the death of the one in this grave than by that of his own father, by his own hand.
The power is yours, came the whispers. Do as you will.
Arthas extended one hand, Frostmourne firmly gripped in the other. Dark light began to swirl around the outstretched hand, increasing in speed. It moved from his fingers like a serpent, undulating and writhing of its own accord, and then it speared down into the earth. Arthas felt it connect with the skeleton below. Joy flooded him, and tears stung his eyes. He lifted his hand, pulling the no longer dead thing from its 7 year slumber in the cool, dark earth.
Arise! He commanded, the word bursting from his throat.
The grave erupted, showering bits of earth. Bony legs pawed, hooves seeking purchase on the shifting soil, and a skull thrust upward, breaking the surface. Arthas watched breathlessly, a smile on his too pale face.
I saw you being born, he thought, remembering a membrane enshrouding a wriggling, wet, new little life. I helped you come into this world, and I helped you leave it. And now, by my hand, you are reborn.
The skeletal steed struggled through the earth and finally emerged, planting its forelegs firmly and hoisting itself up. Red fire burned in its empty eye sockets. It tossed its head, pranced, and somehow whinnied, though its soft tissue had long since rotted away. Trembling, Arthas extended a hand to the undead creature, who wickered and nuzzled his hand with its bony muzzle. 7 years ago, he had ridden this horse to its death. 7 years ago, he had wept tears that had frozen on his face as he lifted his sword and stabbed the beloved beast straight through its gallant heart. He had carried the guilt of that act alone all this time. But now he realized it was all part of his destiny. If he had not slain his steed, he could not now bring it back. Alive, the horse would have feared him. Undead as it was, with fire for eyes, its bones held together by the necromantic magic that Arthas now could wield, thanks to the gift of the mysterious Lich King. Horse and rider could at last be reunited, as they had always been meant to be. It hadn't been a mistake 7 years ago. He hadn't been wrong. Not then, not now, not ever. And this was proof. Throughout the land that he now ruled, his father's blood still slick and crimson on Frostmourne, death was coming. The change. "This kingdom shall fall," he promised his beloved steed, as he threw his cloak over its bony back and mounted. "And from the ashes shall arise a new order that will shake the very foundation of the world." The horse whickered. Invincible. Part 3. The Dark Lady. Interlude. Sylvanas Windrunner, former Ranger General of Quel'Thalas, Banshee, and a Dark Lady of the Forsaken, strode from the royal quarters with the same quick, lithe stride she had had in life. She preferred her corporeal form for ordinary, everyday activities. Her leather boots made no sound on the stone floor of the Undercity, but all heads turned to watch their lady. She was unique and unmistakable. Once, her hair had been golden, her eyes blue, her skin the color of a fresh peach. Once, she had been alive. Now her hair, often covered by a blue-black cowl, was black as midnight with white streaks, and her formerly peach-hued skin a faint, pearly, blue-gray. She'd chosen to don the armor she had worn in life, well-tooled leather that revealed most of her slender but muscular torso. Her ears twitched at the murmurings. She did not often venture forth from her chambers. She was ruler of this city, and the world came to her. Beside her hurried Master Apothecary Farinell, head of the Royal Apothecary Society, who was talking animatedly and simpering. "I am most grateful you agreed to come, my lady," he said, trying to bow and walk and speak at the same time. "You did say you wished to be informed when the experiments were successful, and you wanted to see them yourself once we—" "I am well aware of my own orders, Doctor," Sylvanas snapped as they began to descend a winding corridor into the bowels of the Undercity. "Of course, of course. Here we are." They emerged into a room that, to one with weaker sensibilities, would seem like a house of horrors. On a large table, a stooped undead was busily sewing together pieces of different corpses, humming a little under his breath. Sylvanas smiled slightly. "It is good to see someone who enjoys his work so," she replied a trifle archly. The apprentice started slightly, and then bowed deeply. There was a low buzz of some kind of energy crackling. Other alchemists bustled about, mixing potions, weighing ingredients, jotting notes. The smell was a combination of putrefaction, chemicals, and, incongruously, the clean, sweet smell of certain herbs. Sylvanas was startled by her reaction. The scent of the herbs made her oddly homesick. Fortunately, the softer emotion did not last long. Such emotions never did. "Show me," she demanded. Farinell bowed and ushered her through the main area, past pieces of bodies hanging on hooks, into a side room. The faint sound of sobbing reached her ears. As she entered, Sylvanas saw several cages on the floor, or swinging slowly from chains, all of them filled with test subjects. Some were human, some were forsaken. All were dull-eyed with fear that had pierced so deep and had gone on so long that they were almost numb. They would not be so for much longer. "As you can imagine, my lady," Farinell was saying, "it is difficult to transport Scourge as test subjects. Of course, for experimental purposes, Forsaken are identical to Scourge. But I am delighted to report that our tests in the field have been well documented and quite successful."
Excitement began to stir in Sylvanas, and she graced the apothecary with a rare and still beautiful smile.
"That pleases me greatly," she said.
The undead doctor fairly quivered in delight. He beckoned to his assistant, Kiever, a forsaken whose brain had obviously been damaged by his first death, and who muttered to himself in the third person as he removed two test subjects. One was a human woman, who was apparently not so lost in fear and despair as not to start weeping silently when Kiever dragged her from her cage. The forsaken male, however, was utterly impassive and stood quietly. Sylvanas eyed him.
"Criminal?"
"Of course, my lady." She wondered if it were true. But in the end, it didn't matter. He would serve the Forsaken, even so. The human girl was on her knees. Kiever stooped down, yanked her head up by her hair, and when she opened her mouth to cry out in pain, he poured a cup of something down her throat and covered her mouth, forcing her to swallow. Sylvanas watched while she struggled. Beside her, the Forsaken male accepted the cup that Farinol offered without protest, draining it dry. It happened quickly. The human girl soon stopped struggling, her body tensing, and then going into paroxysms. Kiever let her go, watching almost curiously as blood began to stream from her mouth, nose, eyes, and ears. Sylvanas turned her gaze to the Forsaken. He still regarded her steadily, silently. She began to frown.
"Perhaps this is not as effective as your..."
The Forsaken shuddered. He struggled to stand erect for a moment longer, but his rapidly weakening body betrayed him and he stumbled, falling hard. Everyone stepped back. Sylvanas watched raptly, her lips parted in excitement.
"The same strain?" she asked Farinell.
The human female whimpered once and then was still, her eyes open. The alchemist nodded happily.
"Indeed it is," he said. "As you can imagine, we are quite..."
The undead spasmed, his skin breaking open in spots and weeping black ichor. And then he, too, was still.
"Pleased with the results."
"Indeed," Sylvanas said. She was hard put to conceal her own elation. "Pleased" was a pale word indeed. "A plague that kills both humans and Scourge. And, obviously, affects my own people as well, as they too are undead." She gave him a look from glowing silver eyes. "We must take care that this never falls into the wrong hands. The results could be devastating." He gulped.
"Indeed, my lady, indeed they could."
She forced a neutral expression as she returned to the royal quarters. Her mind was racing with a thousand things, but foremost among them, burning as brightly and wildly as the wicker man she lit every Hallow's End, was a single thought.
"At last, Arthas, you will pay for what you have done. The humans who spawned such as you shall be slaughtered. Your scourge shall be stopped in their tracks. You will no longer be able to hide behind your armies of mindless undead puppets, and we will grace you with the same mercy and compassion you showed us."
Despite her great control, she found herself smiling. Chapter 17. "It was," Arthas mused, as he rode upon the back of the skeletal, faithful invincible toward Anderhall, "a truly great irony that he who had slain the necromancer Kel'Thuzad was now charged with resurrecting him." Frostmourne whispered to him, although he did not need the voice of the sword, the voice of the Lich King as he desired to be known, to reassure him. There was no going back, nor did he wish to. After the fall of Capital City, Arthas had retreated into a dark version of a paladin's pilgrimage. He had ridden the length and breadth of his land, bringing his new subjects to town after town, and unleashing them upon the populace. He thought the Scourge, which Kel'Thuzad had called them, a fitting name,
the instrument of self-flagellation of the same name, sometimes used by some of the more fringe elements of the priesthood, was meant to cleanse impurities. His scourge would cleanse the land of the living. He stood straddling the worlds. He was alive after a fashion, but the Lich King's soft whispers were calling him Death Knight, and the leeching of color from his hair and skin and eyes seemed to indicate that it was more than a title. He did not know. He did not care. He was the Lich King's favored, and the scourge was his to command, and in a strange, twisted way, he found that he cared for them. Arthas now served the Lich King through one of his sergeants, a dreadlord almost identical in form to Mal'Ganis. This, too, was irony. This, too, did not distress him. "Like Mal'Ganis, I am a dreadlord, but I am not your enemy," Tichondrius had reassured him. The lips twisted in a smile that was more of a sneer. "In truth, I've come to congratulate you. By killing your own father and delivering this land to the scourge, you have passed your first test. The Lich King is pleased with your enthusiasm." Arthas felt buffeted by twin emotions, pain and exultation. "Yes," he said, keeping his voice steady in front of the demon. "I've damned everyone and everything I've ever loved in his name, and I still feel no remorse, no pity, no shame." And in his heart of hearts, there came another whisper, but not from Frostmourne. "Liar." He voiced the sentiment down. That voice would be silenced somehow. He could not afford to permit the softness to grow. It was like gangrene. It would eat him if he let it. Tichondrius seemed not to notice. He pointed to Frostmourne. "The runeblade you carry was forged by my kind long ago. The Lich King has empowered it to steal souls. Yours was the first one it claimed." Emotions warred within Arthas. He stared at the blade. Tichondrius's word choice had not escaped him. Stolen. Had the Lich King asked for his soul in exchange for saving his people, Arthas would have given it. But the Lich King had asked no such thing. He had simply taken it. And now it was there, locked inside the glowing weapon, so close to Arthas that the prince, the king, could almost but not quite touch it. And had Arthas even gotten what he had set out to get? Had his people been saved? Did it matter? Tichondrius watched him closely. "Then I'll make do without one," Arthas said lightly. "What is the Lich King's will?" It had been, it turned out, to rally what was left of the cult of the damned, in order to have aid for a greater undertaking, the recovery of Kel'Thuzad's remains. They lay, he had been told, in Anderhal, where Arthas himself had left them, a puddle of reeking, decaying flesh. Anderhal, where the shipments of plagued grain had come from. He recalled his fury as he had attacked the necromancer, but felt it no longer. A smile curved his pale lips. Irony. The buildings that had once been a conflagration were now charred timbers. No one save the undead should be here now. And yet, Arthas frowned, drawing rein. Invincible halted, as obedient in death as he had been in life. Arthas could glimpse figures moving about. What little light there was on this dim day glinted off. "Armor," he said. There were armored men stationed about the perimeter of the cemetery, and one near a small tomb. He squinted, and then his eyes widened. Not just living beings, not just warriors, but paladins. And he knew why they were here. Kel'Thuzad, it seemed, drew the interest of many. But he had dissolved the order. There shouldn't be any paladins, let alone gathered here.
Frostmourne whispered. It was hungry. Arthas drew the mighty rune blade, lifted it so the little army of acolytes who accompanied him could see and be inspired by it, and charged. Invincible sprang forward, and Arthas saw the shock on the faces of the cemetery's guardians as he bore down on them. They fought valiantly, but in the end it was futile, and they knew it. He could see it in their eyes. He had just tugged Frostmourne free, feeling the sword's joy in taking another soul, when a voice cried, "Arthas!" It was a voice Arthas had heard before, but he couldn't quite place it. He turned toward the speaker. The man was tall and imposing. He had removed his helm, and it was the thick beard that jogged Arthas's memory. "Gavinrad," he said, surprised. "It has been a long time." "Not long enough. Where is the hammer we gifted you with?" Gavinrad said, almost spitting the words. "The weapon of a paladin. A weapon of honor." Arthas remembered. It had been this man who had placed the hammer at his feet. How clean, how pure, how simple it had all seemed then. "I have a better weapon now," Arthas said. He lifted Frostmourne. It seemed to pulse eagerly in his hand. A whim struck him, and he obeyed it. "Stand aside, brother," he said, an odd gentleness tinging his voice. "I've come to collect some old bones. For the sake of that day, and for the order to which we both belonged. You will not come to harm if you let me pass." Gavinrad's bushy brows drew together, and he spat in Arthas's direction. "I can't believe that we ever called you brother. Why Uther ever vouched for you is beyond me. Your betrayal has broken Uther's heart, boy. He would have given his life for yours in a second, and this is how you repay his loyalty. I knew it was a mistake to accept a spoiled prince into our order. You've made a mockery of the Silver Hand." Fury rose in Arthas, so swift and so intense he almost choked on it. How dare he? Arthas was a death knight, the hand of the Lich King. Life, death, and unlife, all fell within his purview. And Gavinrad spat upon his offer of safety. Arthas gritted his teeth. "No, my brother," he growled softly. "When I slay your body, and raise it as my servant, and make you dance to my tune, that, Gavinrad, will be a mockery of the Silver Hand." Grinning, he beckoned tauntingly. The undead and the cultists who had accompanied him waited silently. Gavinrad did not rush in, but gathered himself, praying to the light that would not save him. Arthas let him complete his prayer, let his weapon glow, as Arthas's own hammer had once done. With Frostmourne gripped tightly in his hand, and the Lich King's power surging through his dead-not-dead body, he knew that Gavinrad did not stand a chance. Nor did he. The paladin fought with everything he had, but it was not enough. Arthas toyed with him a little, easing the sting that Gavinrad's words had caused, but soon tired of the game and dispatched his erstwhile brother-in-arms with a single mighty sword blow. He felt Frostmourne take in and obliterate yet another soul, and shivered slightly as Gavinrad's lifeless body fell to the earth. Despite what he had promised his now vanquished foe, Arthas let him stay dead. With a curt gesture, he ordered his servants to begin retrieving the corpse. He had left Kel'Thuzad to rot where he had fallen, but someone, doubtless the necromancer's devout followers, had cared enough to put the body in a small crypt. The acolytes of the Cult of the Damned now rushed forward, finding the tomb and with effort pushing aside the lid. Inside was a coffin, which was quickly lifted out. Arthas nudged it with his foot, grinning a little. "Come along now, necromancer," he said teasingly, as the casket was borne into the back of a vehicle referred to as a meat wagon. The powers that you once served have need of you again.
Told you my death would mean little.
Arthas started. He had become somewhat accustomed to hearing voices. The Lich King, through Frostmourne, whispered to him almost constantly now. But this was something different. He recognized the voice. He had heard it before, but arrogant and taunting, not confidential and conspiratorial.
Kel'Thuzad.
What the? Am I hearing ghosts now? Not only hearing them, seeing them. Or one specific ghost, at least. Kel'Thuzad's shape slowly formed before his eyes, translucent and hovering, the eyes dark holes. But it was unmistakably him, and the spectral lips curved in a knowing smile.
I was right about you, Prince Arthas.
It took you long enough.
The bass, angry rumble of Tichondria seemed to come out of nowhere, and the specter, if it had indeed actually been there, disappeared. Arthas was shaken. Had he imagined it? Was he starting to lose his sanity along with his soul? Tichondrius had not noticed anything, and continued, removing the casket and peering disgustedly inside at the nearly liquefied corpse of Kel'Thuzad. Arthas found the stench more tolerable than he had expected, though it was still horrific. It seemed like a lifetime ago he had struck at the necromancer with his hammer, and watched the too rapid decomposition of the newly dead man. These remains are badly decomposed. They will never survive the trip to Quel'Thalas. Arthas seized on the distraction.
Quel'Thalas, the golden land of the elves.
Yes, only the energies of the High Elves Sunwell can bring Kel'Thuzad back to life. The Dreadlord's frown deepened. And with each moment he decays further. You must steal a very special urn from the Paladin's keeping. They are burying it here now. Place the necromancer's remains within it, and he will be well protected for the journey. The Dreadlord was smirking. There was more to this than at first was apparent. Arthas opened his mouth to inquire, then closed it. Tichondrius would not tell him anyway. He shrugged, mounted Invincible, and rode where he was told. Behind him, he heard the demon's dark laughter. Tichondrius had been right. Moving slowly along the road, on foot, was a small funeral procession. A military funeral, or one for an important dignitary. Arthas recognized the trappings of such things. Several men in armor marched single file. One man in the center carried something in powerful arms. The faint sun glinted on his armor and upon the item he bore, the urn of which Tichondrius had spoken. And suddenly Arthas understood why Tichondrius had been amused. The paladin's carriage was distinctive, his armor unique, and Arthas gripped Frostmourne with hands that had suddenly become slightly unsteady. He forced the myriad, confusing, unsettling sensations down and ordered his men to approach. The funeral party was not large, though it was filled with fighters of distinction, and it was an easy matter to completely surround them. They drew their weapons, but did not attack, turning instead for instructions to the man who bore the urn. Uther, for it could be no one else, seemed completely in control as he regarded his former student. His face was impassive, but more lined than Arthas remembered. His eyes, however, burned with righteous fury.
The dog returns to his vomit, Uther said, the words cracking like a whip. I'd prayed you'd stay away.
Arthas twitched slightly. His voice was rough as he replied,
I'm a bad copper. I just keep turning up. I see you still call yourself a paladin, even though I dissolved your order.
Uther actually laughed, though it was bitter laughter.
As if you could dissolve it yourself.
I answered to the light, boy.
So did you, once.
The light. He still remembered it. His heart lurched in his chest, and for a moment, just a moment, he lowered the sword. Then the whispers came, reminding him of the power he now bore, emphasizing that walking the path of the light had not gotten him what he craved. Arthas gripped Frostmourne firmly once more.
I did many things once, he retorted.
No longer.
Your father ruled this land for 50 years, and you've ground it to dust in a matter of days. But undoing and destruction is easy, isn't it?
Very dramatic, Uther. Pleasant as this is, I've no time to reminisce. I've come for the urn. Give it to me, and I'll make sure you die quickly. No sparing, this one. Not even if he begged. Especially not if he begged. There was too much history between them. Too much feeling. Now Uther showed emotion other than anger. He stared at Arthas aghast.
This urn holds your father's ashes, Arthas.
What?
Were you hoping to piss on them one last time before you left his kingdom to rot?
A sudden jolt went through Arthas.
Father.
I didn't know what it held, he murmured, as much to himself as to Uther. So this was the second reason the Dreadlord had smirked as he had given Arthas his instructions. He, at least, had known what the urn contained. Test after test. Could Arthas fight his mentor? Could he blaspheme his father's ashes? Arthas was growing sick of it. He harnessed that anger as he spoke, dismounting and drawing Frostmourne.
Nor does it matter. I'll take what I came for, one way or another.
Frostmourne was almost humming now, in his mind and in his hand, eager for battle.
Arthas settled into attack position. Uther regarded him for a moment, then slowly lifted his own glowing weapon.
I didn't want to believe it, he said, his voice gruff, and Arthas realized with horror that tears stood in Uther's eyes.
When you were younger and selfish, I called it a child's failing. When you pushed on stubbornly, I dismissed it as a youth's need to move out from under his father's shadow. And Stratholm, aye, light forgive me, even that. I prayed you would find your own path to see the error of your judgment. I could not stand against my liege's son.
Arthas forced a smile as the two began to circle each other. But now you do.
It was my last promise to your father. To my friend. I would see his remains treated with reverence. Even after his own son brutally slaughtered him, unaware and unarmed.
You'll die for that promise.
Possibly.
It didn't seem to bother Uther much.
I'd rather die honoring that promise than live at your mercy. I'm glad he's dead. I'm glad he doesn't have to see what you've become.
The remark. Hurt. Arthas hadn't expected it to. He paused, emotions warring within him, and Uther, ever the better in their bouts, used that brief hesitation to charge forward.
For the light!
He cried, pulling the hammer back and swinging it at Arthas with all his strength. The gleaming weapon arced at Arthas so swiftly he could hear the sound of its movement. He leaped aside, barely in time, and felt the air brush his face as the weapon rushed past. Uther's expression was calm and focused and deadly. It was his duty, as he saw it, to slay the betraying son and stop the spread of evil. Just as Arthas knew it was his duty to slay the man who had once mentored him. He needed to kill his past, all of his past, or else it would forever reach out with the deceptively sweet hope of compassion and forgiveness. With an incoherent cry, Arthas brought Frostmourne down.
Uther's hammer blocked it. The two men strained, their faces within inches of each other, the muscles in their arms shaking with effort, until with a grunt, Uther shoved Arthas backward. The younger man stumbled. Uther pressed the attack. His face was calm, but his eyes were fierce and resolute, and he seemed to fight as if his victory was inevitable. The utter confidence shook Arthas. His own blows were powerful, but erratic. He'd never been able to best Uther before.
"It ends here, boy!" Uther cried, his voice ringing. Suddenly, to Arthas's horror, the paladin was limned in a glowing, brilliant light. Not just his hammer, but his entire body, as if he himself was the true weapon of the light that would strike Arthas down.
"For the light's justice!"
The hammer descended. All the air in Arthas's body was knocked out of him with a rush as the blow landed straight and true across his midsection. Only his armor saved him, and even that crumpled beneath the glowing hammer wielded by the holy, radiant paladin. Arthas went sprawling, Frostmourne flying from his grip, agony shooting through him as he struggled to breathe, struggled to rise. The light. He had turned his back on it, had betrayed it. And now it was exacting retribution through Uther the Lightbringer, its greatest champion, infusing his old teacher with the purity of its brilliance and purpose. The glow enveloping Uther increased, and Arthas grimaced in agony as the light seared his eyes as well as his soul. He'd been wrong to forsake it, horribly wrong, and now its mercy and love had been transformed into this radiant, implacable being. He stared upward into the white light that was Uther's eyes, tears filling his own as he awaited the killing blow. Had he grasped the sword without realizing it, or had it leaped into his hands of its own volition? In the swirling mental chaos that was that moment, Arthas could not tell. All he knew was that suddenly his hands were closing on Frostmourne's hilt, and its voice was in his mind.
"Every light has its shadow. Every day has its night, and even the brightest candle can be snuffed out. And so can the brightest life." He let out a gulping inhalation, sucking breath into his lungs, and for just a second, Arthas saw the light enveloping Uther dim. Then Uther lifted the hammer again, ready to deal the killing blow. But Arthas was not there. If Uther was a bear, enormous and powerful, Arthas was a tiger, strong and coiled and swift. The hammer, strong and light-blessed though it and its wielder might be, was not a fast weapon, nor was Uther's style of fighting. Frostmourne, however, though it was an enormous two-handed runeblade, seemed to almost be able to fight on its own. He moved forward again, no hesitancy this time, and began to fight in earnest. He gave no quarter as he attacked Uther the Lightbringer, offered no moment's breathing space for the paladin to draw back the weapon to deliver a crushing blow. Uther's eyes widened with shock, then narrowed in determination. But the light that had once surged so brightly from his powerful frame was diminishing with each passing second. Diminishing before the power granted to him by the Lich King. Again and again Frostmourne landed. Here on the hammer's glowing head. Here on the shaft. Here on Uther's shoulder. In that narrow space between gorget and shoulder pauldrons, biting deep. Uther grunted and staggered back. Blood poured from the wound. Frostmourne craved more, and Arthas wanted to give it more. Snarling like a beast, his white hair flying, he pressed the attack. The hammer, great and glowing, fell from Uther's nerveless fingers as Frostmourne nearly severed the arm. A blow dented Uther's breastplate. A second in the same spot cleaved it and tore at the flesh beneath. Uther's tabard, the blue and gold of the alliance he had once fought for, fluttered to the snow-covered earth in pieces as Uther the Lightbringer fell heavily to his knees. He looked up. His breathing came with difficulty. Blood trickled from his mouth, seeping into his beard, but there was no hint of surrender on his face. "I dearly hope that there's a special place in hell waiting for you, Arthas," he coughed, the blood bubbling up. "We may never know, Uther," Arthas said coldly, lifting Frostmourne for the final blow. The sword nearly sang in anticipation. "I intend to live forever." He brought the rune blade straight down, through Uther's throat, silencing the defiant words, piercing the great heart. Uther died almost immediately. Arthas tugged the blade free and stepped back, shaking. Surely, it was only from the release of tension and exultation. He knelt and picked up the urn. He held it for a long moment, then slowly broke the seal and tipped the jar over, pouring out its contents. The ashes of King Taranis fell like gray rain, like plagued flour, drifting down onto the snow. Abruptly, the wind shifted. The gray powder that was all that was left of a king suddenly took flight, as if animated, whirling to shower the Death Knight. Startled, Arthas took a step backward. His hands automatically came up to shield his face, and he dropped the urn, which landed with a dull thunk on the ground. He shut his eyes and turned away, but not quickly enough, and began to cough violently, the ashes acrid and choking. Abruptly, panic seized him. His gauntleted hands came up to swipe at his face, trying to wipe off the fine powder that clogged his throat and nose and stung his eyes. He spat, and for a moment his stomach roiled. Arthas took a deep breath and forced calm upon himself. A moment later he rose, composed once again. If he felt anything at all, he had locked it so deep he did not know it. Stone-faced, he returned to the wagon that bore the reeking, nearly liquid remains of Kel'Thuzad and shoved it at one of the scourge. "Put the necromancer in here," he ordered. He mounted Invincible. Quel'Thalas was not far. Chapter 18. During the 6 days it took to reach the high elven lands, Arthas spoke with the shade of Kel'Thuzad and gathered many, many more to his side. From Anderhall eastward he went, the meat wagons grinding along in his wake, past the little hamlets of Fellstone Field, Dalson's Orchard, and Garen's Quickening, across the Thondroral River, into the eastern part of Lordaeron. Risen plague victims were everywhere, and a simple mental command brought them to heel like faithful hounds. Care of them was easy. They fed on the dead. It was very tidy. These Arthas was expecting to come to his side. The plague victims, the abominations sewn together of many parts, the ghosts of the fallen. But a new ally joined him, one that startled, appalled, and then delighted him. His army was halfway to Quel'Thalas when he first saw them. Far in the distance, it first appeared as if the earth itself was moving. No, that wasn't right. These were beasts of a sort. Cattle or sheep that had broken out of their pens when their owners turned into the walking dead? Bears or wolves, foraging and feasting on corpses? And then Arthas gasped and grasped Frostmourne tightly, his eyes wide with shock and disbelief. They did not move like four-legged creatures. They scuttled, scurried, moving over the hills and grasses like spiders, he murmured. Now they poured down the slopes, purple and black and dangerous-looking,
multiple legs scurrying quickly to bear them to Arthas. They were coming for him. They...
These are the new warriors the Lich King sends to his favored one, came Kel'Thuzad's voice. The ghost apparently could be heard and seen only by Arthas, and he had been doing a great deal of talking in the last few days. He had recently focused on sowing the seeds of suspicion in the Death Knight's mind. Not of himself, of Tychondrius and the other demons.
The Dreadlords cannot be trusted, he had said. They are the Lich King's jailers. I will tell you all when I walk this world again.
They had had enough time. Arthas wondered if Kel'Thuzad was dangling the information in front of him like bait to ensure that Arthas completed the task. Now, Arthas asked,
he sent these to me. What are they?
They once were Nerubians, Kel'Thuzad said, descendants of an ancient and proud race called the Akir. In life, they were fiercely intelligent, their will dedicated to wiping out any who were not like themselves. Arthas eyed the arachnid creatures with a shiver of disgust.
Lovely. And now?
Now, these are those who fell battling the one we serve. He has raised them and their lord, Anubarak, into undeath. And now they come to aid you, Prince Arthas, to serve his glory and yours.
Undead spiders, Arthas mused. They were huge, hideous, deadly. They came chittering and scuttling, merging into step with the corpses, specters, and abominations, to fight the elves of Quel'Thalas. This Lich King, whomever he was, had a flair for the dramatic. Arthas's coming, of course, was witnessed. The elves bred notoriously fine scouts. Chances were, by the time Arthas himself noticed them, word had already gone ahead. It didn't matter. The force he had assembled had grown to a truly impressive size, and he had no doubt, despite Kel'Thuzad's fretful warnings, that he would be able to gain entry into the wondrous Eternal Land, move through it swiftly, and reach the Sunwell. They had captured a prisoner, a young priest who, in an act of defiance, had inadvertently revealed some important information. Arthas would use the information wisely and well. Two, there was another, one who, unlike the priest, would willingly betray his people and their land for the power that Arthas and the Lich King had promised him. It surprised the Death Knight how readily this elven mage had turned. Surprised and unsettled him. Arthas had once been loved by his people, as his father before him had been. He had enjoyed basking in the warm approval from those who served under him. He had taken time to learn their names, to listen to stories of their families. He had wanted them to love him. And they had, following him loyally, as Captain Falric had done. But Arthas had to assume that the elven leaders too loved their people. Assumed, as Arthas assumed, that they would stay loyal. And yet this mage had betrayed his people for nothing more than the mere promise of power, the simple, glittering allure of it. Mortals could be corrupted. Mortals could be swayed or bought. He looked over his current army and smiled. Yes, this was better. There was no question of loyalty when those he led could do nothing but obey. It is true, the scout gasped. All of it.
Sylvanas Windrunner, Ranger General of Silvermoon, knew this elf well. Kel'Maren's information was always accurate and detailed. She listened, wanting to disbelieve, knowing she did not dare. They had all heard the rumors, of course, that some sort of plague had begun to creep across the human lands. But the Quel'Darai had thought themselves safe here in their homeland. It had withstood attacks from dragons, orcs, and trolls over the centuries, Surely, what was occurring in the human lands would not touch them. Except it had.